Welcome to Signs of Life, exploring survival of consciousness, brought to you by the Forever Family Foundation on the web at www.foreverfamilyfoundation.org.
I can feel you like an ocean that won't seem to let me go.
Welcome to The Gathering on Signs of Life Radio, our monthly discussion show with Tom and Melissa Gould and Fran Ginsberg, and I'm Bob Ginsberg. And tonight's topic is common cliches and sayings about grief and the afterlife. And there's certainly a lot of them. I hope you guys brought a couple of them with you. If not, you're going to have to make them up.
I have a couple.
Oh, my God.
Very commonplace.
All right. And tonight's sponsor is the Comlock Center, and you can find them on the web at Comlock, K-A-M-L-A-K.com. Fran, you have something you want to tell us about the raffle and the grief retreat and the webinars?
Loads of things to tell you. So let's just start out with reminding our listeners, like we always do, that you could get the latest and the greatest information on what's happening at Forever Family Foundation by going to the website, foreverfamilyfoundation.org, and you could click on the upcoming events link, and everything that's going to be happening that we know about anyway is on that link. Just to let our listeners know what else they might be missing that's coming up this month, April 8th, that's this Saturday, from 2 to 3 p.m. Eastern Time, 11 to noon Pacific, Visionary Explorers Group meets online. On April 9th, from 2 to 4, our Afterlife Discussion Group meets in Sanibel, Florida. And, biggie, our raffle drawing is on April 22nd, Earth Day. You got to be in it to win it. Our Holiday of the Earth raffle drawing is this month, and just a little more than 2 weeks away. And as of this moment, we only have, and this is wrong, I checked it again lately, we have 71 people who have entered the raffle. So you guys do the math. It's only $5 for a raffle entry, and you get five raffle entries if you want to spend $20, and then it gets better if you spend more money. But there are five one-hour medium readings that are being raffled off. So if you do the math, only 71 people have entered to win those five readings. So you want to get right in there and get your raffle drawings purchased and in the running. Just to let you know, the certified mediums who will be offering those readings are Dustin Livers, Ginger Quinlan, Nancy Marlowe, Heidi Jaffe, and Bobby Allison. And reminder, the drawing is April 22nd on Earth Day. And if you missed our fabulous April webinar with Dr. Nancy Zingroni, while you are on our website getting your raffle entries, you can sign up for our next webinar with Dr. Piero Calvi-Parisetti on May 13th at, and this time is wrong, because he's in another country.
Yeah. Right.
So it's not going to be our 9 p.m. Eastern time that it normally is. I think it's when you're on the website signing up, you will see what time it is, but it is a Saturday, May 13th, and it corresponds with a decent time that he will be awake in order for him to deliver the webinar for us here in the United States. The name of the presentation is Basis for a Rational Belief in Life After Life. And for our listeners tonight, we have a special member-only coupon code for free seats. So grab them while you can. You'll register as you would normally register. In the promotions line, write the word belief, B-E-L-I-E-F. And if you're not yet a member, or you are a member who has not yet satisfied our 30-day waiting period, you can enjoy a half-price seat with the code Parisetti, and I'm going to spell that.
Yeah, I don't know.
It's Paris, P-A-R-I-S, and then E-T-T-I. Those are T's, like in Tom Gould. Remember to sign up now, as there are only a limited number of these free seats and the reduced price seats. The super early bird registration for our annual grief retreat has ended, but our early bird reduced rates will remain available until May 31st, when we will begin charging the full cost to attend. We have recommended booking early, as last year the rooms at the retreat filled and some attendees had to stay off premises. At this time, two-thirds of the spots at this limited attendance retreat have been taken, and we have only 15 rooms left on site. If you're booking early, please keep in mind our no-refund policy. This event only gets better each year, so plan to join us this July 14th through 16th. Be one of only 50 guests who come from across the globe to spend a weekend in a beautiful and peaceful setting with like-minded people, all learning that our loved ones are still with us. The weekend is all-inclusive and features spirit communication with Forever Family Foundation certified mediums Rebecca Ann Lo Cicero, Joe Peretta, and Gina Simone, working alongside our other professionals and facilitators. It also includes a variety of activities and small breakout workshops, all designed to heal. And please, please, please help keep all of our programs going by visiting our website and clicking on the donation button. It's on every page. Because of the work we do not receive the grants and funding that all other traditional not-for-profits enjoy. So if you have benefited in any way from all of the services that all of the volunteers offer you, the radio show, the magazines, the website, everything else, please click on that donation button so we can keep all of these things going. You can also help us pay our bills by participating in iGive.com, Amazon.com, Amazon Smile, great nonprofits, and WellZoo. And if you are a business and would like to advertise on the show, please email us at businessmembership@foreverfamilyfoundation.org. I'm done, Bob.
And thanks for coming, and have a good evening. So tonight's topic, as I mentioned, common things that people say when they talk about death, when they talk about the afterlife, when they talk about grief. Some of them we just rattle off and we don't give a second thought to them. People react differently. Certainly when it comes to grief, I find that a lot of people react differently to the things that people say to them. If you go on the web, you'll see all sorts of things like stupid things people say, you know, and then it's just, they're well-meaning, but they just don't understand. So
I think it's also people get into a rut of just responding and not thinking. You know, it's even not just about grief in the afterlife. It's just like you walk up to somebody that you know and you say, hi, how are you? And they immediately say, oh, I'm fine, and you?
Yeah.
It's that kind of stuff. So while we're going to talk about a lot of things that cause more pain and hurt, I think we also have to take into consideration that people aren't always thinking.
Yeah, and some of the things, as I mentioned, have to do with grief, and some have to do with just the nature of time and fate and, you know, how we say these things. For instance, sometimes we might say to somebody, well, you need to do some soul searching.
Ooh.
You know, what does that actually mean? I mean, you would think, so on the face of it, like you would say that to somebody when they're facing a decision, they don't know what to do. Mm-hmm. So I guess the meaning behind it is to look deep inside of yourself.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I don't know where that...
I've also heard it as a response to somebody who's done something deliberately wrong.
Right.
Well, yeah.
That seems,
you know, you need
better
to do some soul searching. And that and that's a well-deserved remark,
right,
at that point.
So when you think about it, it came about because if you're doing some soul searching, the soul is the pureness, not compromised by anything else. So you're looking deep into your essence. I guess that's your purpose.
That sounds like something you might say to someone going off to prison.
Right. Well, if you notice, a lot of people that go to prison, they come out with religion. Right? Mm-hmm. You know, so maybe that is...
They've been in solitary a lot.
Right. another thing that people say about people that have passed is they say that they live on in your heart. right? That they'll always live on in your heart. And people in speeches, they'll say the same thing. They will always live on in our heart. And on one side of it, that's a good thing because it's true. You know, that we're always going to remember them. We're never going to forget them. And the heart is the center of love, so that makes sense. The other side of the coin is, and we've talked about this before, I mean, for those of us who believe that there is no death, we don't want them to just live on in a heart. We want them to live on.
Yeah. Yeah.
They're not gone, you know. So I always found that a little bit, I wouldn't say, you know, offensive, but I was a little put off by that because I just, you know, I'd rather somebody say, well, your loved one lives on than live on your heart. Your thoughts?
True. Yeah, I liked that expression, death is just a comma, when you think of linear.
Right. You're looking at me like we need to take a break, right?
Do we?
I think so.
Okay.
All right, so we're going to take a quick break, and we're going to continue with a lot more of these cliches. And if you have one of your own, call us, 1-888-627-6008. Stay with us. We'll be back in a couple of minutes.
The Camlack Center is putting birth and death back together again. Aimed at changing the way we look at death, the Camlack Center was founded in 2002 as a publishing company and teaching center. When we know that there is nothing but life, we realize that birth and death are events in time and space. Our grief can open us to other dimensions of reality and allow us to experience our loved ones who are no longer in the physical body. Our events and products are based on personal experiences of survival of consciousness after physical death and decades of research into how death has influenced the development of our consciousness. Visit www.camlack.com, that's K-A-M-L-A-K.com, for articles, videos, books, and more to help you cope with the loss of a loved one.
Imagine seeing spirits are spontaneously speaking indigenous Brazilian rainforest languages. Janet Mayer, a psychic medium, does just that. In her new book, Spirits, They Are Present, she opens the door to her private life in order to share her compelling, fearful, and at times humorous journey, providing evidence that when we die, we simply make a transition to another life. Spirits, They Are Present, available now at www.janetmayer.net, Amazon, and other online booksellers. Order your copy today.
Hello, I am Lloyd Auerbach, parapsychologist and author. You can learn much more about life after death, precognition, mind-matter interactions, remote viewing, ghost hunting, and other psychic experiences and research through the acclaimed Distance Learning Parapsychological Studies program at HCH Institute. Our courses are audio-based with additional written and video material. Call HCH at 925-283-3941 or visit www.hypnotherapytraining.com. Our courses include The Search for Life After Death, Being Psychic, Psychokinesis and Precognition, Ghost Hunting, Theories and Models of Psychic Experience, and more. Taken singly or as part of the certificate program, these courses will enrich your knowledge of parapsychology and the range of psychic phenomena. You'll learn about being psychic yourself. Visit www.hypnotherapytraining.com or call 925-283-3941 for information about our individual distance learning courses and certificate program.
I would like to introduce you to the Forever Family Foundation, a nonprofit organization whose mission is to provide a forum where individuals and families who have suffered the loss of a loved one can turn for support, information, and hope. We believe in the continuity of the family, even though a member has left the physical world. The Forever Family Foundation is a joint effort of scientists, research mediums, and interested people who support the premise that life does not end with physical death. We wish to prove that the bond of the family cannot be broken even by death. We invite anyone who's trying to cope with the loss of a loved one to contact the Forever Family Foundation at 631-425-7707. That's 631-425-7707. Or you can find us on the web at foreverfamilyfoundation.org. After-death communication is an accepted occurrence in many cultures throughout the world. But for many others, proof of this phenomenon is essential. And research shows that contact helps move people through loss and grief. The Sign Registry allows people to register signs that they, after passing, plan on communicating to specific loved ones. Contact the Forever Family Foundation at foreverfamilyfoundation.org or go directly to thesignregistry.com.
Welcome back to Signs of Life, brought to you by the Forever Family Foundation.
Welcome back to The Gathering on Signs of Life Radio. We're talking about common cliches about grief and the afterlife and death and the nature of time and things people say. Why don't we go to the phones and take a caller?
We have Sue from Connecticut. Sue, are you there?
I'm there. I'm here. Hi.
Hi,
Sue.
Hi.
Do you have something that you'd like to share that people say?
Well, yes. After my husband passed, there were several people that said to me, you'll feel better in time. You'll move on.
Yeah.
You're young. You have your whole life ahead of you. And it didn't help at all.
No.
Because I think time just allows your mind to wrap around the reality, but I don't really feel all that much better. Well, I do know that he's still with me, so that does make me feel better in some ways, but time didn't really do that for me. So it just, I don't think that people really know what's going on inside of you, and they have good intentions, but may not always be helpful.
Yeah, I wholeheartedly agree. I mean, a lot of people, they always say time heals all, you know, so, you know, that's been the saying forever. And you're right. What about when people will say that it'll be a year or two, and they'll say, well, you know, it's been 2 years. You should be over it already.
Oh.
You know, then you want to just punch
them. Right, exactly. right.
Yeah.
And, that intense grief, you can't measure it. You can't put a timeline on it.
No.
And,
people
don't understand.
Yeah, I remember from my own experience that, I bought into that, you know, because I felt the same, you know, utter devastation. And I said to myself, okay, if it gets better with time, if only I could last the first, year. If I could get through the first year, you know, I'll be okay. And then, of course, the year went by, and I still felt like shit. So.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So,
exactly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So yeah, you're right, and I agree. And but I will say that grief changes with time. It gets different. I mean, it never goes away.
Yes.
But it does get different. So would you agree with that?
I do, and I think it's just in my case, and I think also in yours, I'm not sure, but it was a sudden loss. So I think that. In time, I got used to the fact that he was no longer with me.
Right.
And it just took a while for my brain to adapt. So
yeah.
Time did that for me, but the hole in my heart is still there.
Yeah.
And that will never go away.
It does help to know that, they're still
mm-hmm.
around in just in a different form.
Absolutely, and the work that you do has helped tremendously. And I did attend the grief retreat last year, and I'll be there again this year. And that was a big turning point for me. That really was very helpful.
Good, and we look forward to seeing you again soon.
Yes.
Okay, thanks for calling.
Thank you.
Right.
Good night.
Bye-bye. You know, along those same lines, people often say that you need to find closure. That's another big one.
Yeah.
You've heard that, right?
Yeah.
I don't know if people have said that to you, but that, to me is horrible. You know, it's like, what does that mean? You know, finding closure. You know, that makes no sense.
These sounds like
shutting them out. Even, you know, really is what that sounds like.
Yeah,
closure to mean closing
the book and forgetting about
that
it.
That comes from an old therapist's jargon.
Yeah,
you know, working on closure of something that was traumatic. Not necessarily a loss or a death, but just closure from something so that you can get back to work.
Move on with your life, which is certainly what you're
And that is the problem with therapy as a whole, is that they've always had that philosophy that if you separate from the pain, if you separate from the deceased person, if you separate from the loss, then you can go on. And it's the opposite that we find is true. If you understand that they're still here and they still want to be a part of your life and you can still incorporate them into your life, then that's much more beneficial than trying to cut off something that's always been a part of your life.
I was looking at some, you know, famous quotes. Mark Twain said, "I do not fear death. I had been dead for billions and billions of years before I was born and had not suffered the slightest inconvenience from it."
Sounds like Woody Allen.
Well, Woody Allen says, I don't fear death. I just don't want to be there when it happens.
Right, that's a famous one. Edgar Allan Poe wrote, "The boundaries which divide life from death are at best shadowy and vague. Who shall say where one ends and the other begins?" Mm-hmm. Yeah. There are some things that people say that certainly our audience can relate to, is that everything happens for a reason. You know, and that has kind of takes on a different meaning when you're talking about grief. But a lot of people just feel in their everyday life that things happen for a reason. A lot of people live their lives by that. I go back and forth, you know, on that subject. I don't think that everything happens for a reason. I think that a lot of things do. But
yeah, I could go with that.
What do you think, Francis?
I think depending on how you're going to use that phrase.
Yeah.
Will determine whether or not it's a good phrase or not such a good phrase. Because if, you know, we've had even mediums say everything happens for a reason.
Yeah.
You know, and I believe it's Suzanne Northrup has a book entitled Everything Happens
right.
for a Reason. And so they try to explain away, I guess, if you can embrace the fact that when something negative comes into your life, you should use it as a pivotal point to learn something or to bring yourself to a new level or whatever it is, but you can take that negative and make it into as positive a thing as you can. Death, the way we've grown into a culture to understand death, is such a negative, finite thing that only brings horror to you on a day-to-day basis until you can work your way through it. But if you understand that it's not the end, that it is just a change and that you will cycle back through this again and that that person's essence, personality, consciousness, whatever you want to call it, soul, spirit, is still there and we have so much evidence that it is, that's something to embrace.
Right. Tom, you going to add to that?
Well, it just, you know, I agree that little things here and there maybe happen without reason, but I mean, we're talking about, this is a pretty big thing, and that what we've heard is that you contract before you come here with how you're going to leave and when. And so, in that respect, you can tell somebody that, you know, there's a reason why this person was taken at this time, and that it happens for that reason. I don't know if it's necessarily helpful in the grief process.
Yeah.
I mean, it's helpful in the understanding of the whole universe, but as far as making you feel better that they're gone, I wouldn't care.
Yeah. Well, I guess on the grief aspect, it only makes you feel better if you think that it was part of a bigger plan, you know, that there are, you know, greater things that await. What I disliked immensely was when people said, well, it was their time, you know.
Yeah,
you know,
that's
which,
what I wrote down, too.
Right, so there was their time to go, and there's nothing you could do about it. I never found that to be helpful. What do you mean, you know, their time?
Yeah.
Who made that time, you know? So,
yeah.
But as Fran was saying, in the broader picture, if you believe that, and as you mentioned, Thomas, that there's a contract that's made, and this was a learning experience in a finite number of years in this physical existence, I mean, you could find deeper meaning in that, you know, if you're part of this greater soul awareness. So I could see that working both ways. The nature of time is interesting. Because people, when something happens, right, usually when it's something traumatic and they say time stood still, right? You hear that a lot.
Yeah,
you know,
sure.
It was as if time stood still. I wonder, you know, how that first came about. I mean, I think we've all had experiences, I know I have, where things seem to be going in slow motion.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Especially in a traumatic situation. I've had that, you know.
Yeah.
You're falling, and you have time to think, oh, I'm falling. I wonder how this is going to end up.
Right. And you see it playing out.
Yeah.
You know, it says something about the nature of time, really. You know, I mean, here we can, it seems to transcend time. It's, you know, time's not linear in that respect.
Yeah.
But it's also, and you could probably relate to this as a musician, where you seem to, you know, get in the zone. Right, you're in a zone, and you sort of lose relationship to time.
Yeah, oh, without a doubt.
Yeah. Melissa, I know you're shaking your head. Have you ever had an experience like that where things seem to slow down? And
well, I just know that in a fraction of a second, it's remarkable how many thoughts you can formulate. And the example I have isn't something that would be helpful in this case, but if you think about it, you know, it's just remarkable that it's such a short amount of time, and yet if you were to write out those thoughts, it would probably take you a couple of minutes.
Right.
But they hit you all at once, just like that. So I know the instance Tom was talking about when he was falling, and you must have been just falling down like a tree, but you were having. But you were playing out your whole life.
Yeah. What?
In a sense.
It ties into the near-death experience, right? The life review. People, it only lasts, you know, a minute or so, and yet a whole lifetime of experiences are reviewed, you know, and remembered, and judged, you know, self-judgment. So that goes along with your saying, you know, that what does time mean in that situation?
I know, and time, the whole concept of time in all of our discussions is still so challenging for me to wrap my mind around, you know, if time is linear, or when you folks tell me everything's happening all at once, I'm too literal, I can't go there. If I think about it, though, it's really, really hard.
Well, the reason I brought up in music, the only thing that I can really relate to is when I used to play tennis a lot. And I, every once in a while, I'd be, you know, playing usually somebody that was a lot better than I was. And for whatever reason, I got into that zone where I was invincible. There was nothing that I could do wrong. And I was sort of like being outside my body watching me play, you know. And I would imagine that feeling would be, you know, as a musician that you get into, do you ever feel like you're out of body and that it's not really you that's playing?
Yeah, a lot of times. I mean, especially, you know, when you play a show out in a club or something like that, and then after the set's over, you start thinking and you can remember, you know, what seeing groups of people around and what, oh, this person over here was doing this, or, oh, this person was clapping along, you know, and you seem to have a bigger scope than if you had just stood on the stage not playing anything. I don't think you would remember all that sort of thing.
Makes me wonder what the perspective of time is on the other people in these other dimensions, on the other side, so to speak. You know,
no time.
No time. So how do, you know, how do it's a hard concept, you know.
Because you deal with time.
Right.
But for them, it's like, what are you talking about? Everything has to happen in order.
Right.
It all happens. It just happens.
That's series of moments.
Series of moments. That's when Melissa will find out that everything could be happening all at once, past, present, and future.
And you know, Bob, it's interesting because I've been reading some historical fiction and stories that were written in the 1800s. Along these lines, the characters in the stories are saying, well, there is no time on this side. So it's not even a new concept at all.
No.
Which is so interesting.
Yeah.
My theory is that we butchered the original concept.
Yeah,
and that's why we can't understand it.
Yeah.
Like everything else. I think telepathy, we had to have that as our first form of communication. We did not have language when we were put onto this world. So why should we not be able to reinstill the ability to communicate telepathically again?
Is that what animals do, or birds when they fly?
It has to be what animals do.
They all know
when there's when there's a tsunami, they know way in advance. We don't. We have to get drowned by the water, but they know to go to higher land.
So if I say to you, beyond the veil, what does that mean to you? You've heard that all the time, right? Beyond the veil. What do you think that came about?
Oh, do you know its origin?
I looked it up, but I'm asking you what you think of it.
Well, beyond the veil means as if through the veil to the, you know, stepping from the physical to the...
That there's a thin boundary that divides this physical world from the non-physical world, and that is referred to as the veil.
That's how I always thought about
it. Yeah, and the fact that it's a veil, veils tend to be translucent. You can sort of see through them, so it would explain why you could see spirit. Everyone, because they're just behind a veil.
Right. That all makes sense. When I looked it up, it said it was originally used to refer to the veil that hides the inmost sanctuary of the temple in Jerusalem. So, I mean, originally, I don't know, it wasn't the same connotation, but that kind of morphed into also refers to just a mysterious place.
How do you know? Maybe what was beyond the veil that they were hiding from the public was full view of the afterlife.
It could be.
You know, I know that there is, and I think Leonard Nimoy shared a story like this on YouTube someplace, where he used to go to temple during the high holidays, and there's one part of the prayer where you're supposed to put the prayer shawl over your head while you're praying, because during that prayer is when you're exposed to the other world and you're not supposed to look at it. So that falls in with what you're trying to describe,
right.
Bob, where you're not supposed to look at it because the description was it would be too much for us to comprehend.
Uh-huh.
So we're not supposed to look at it.
And there's been writings about geographic locations on the planet where it's highly spiritual and which would make sense in the temple you're talking about, that might be a spot where you can see the other side, so I put the veil there.
True. And a lot of things that we talk about, you know, we talk about people catching a glimpse through the veil or piercing the veil through meditation or whatever, in NDE or organization. You know, it's an interesting term. You know, I was wondering, now we people use it all the time, even people that have no idea what a near-death experience is, but they'll say, oh, I can see the light at the end of the tunnel.
Yeah.
You know, that's an expression I would imagine that goes, you know, way back. I don't know where it was derived, but interesting, though, that, you know, when people started describing or putting a name to these experiences, a near-death experience, one of the common elements to the experience is going through a tunnel and moving towards a light.
Yeah.
So,
my dad had one of those.
Really?
Yeah. He, you know, towards the end of his life, he had an operation that the doctor said he had a heart attack on the table, but he survived it. And when we went to visit him the day later, he talked about, there was a tunnel, and he said, my buddies were saying, run, Harry, run, and it was towards a light. But he knew that he had to come back basically he had a message for my daughter that he wanted to deliver. And, you know, and so he came back, delivered the message, and then a day or two later he had a stroke, and that was it.
So do you think that he, you know, acknowledged that experience as sort of seeing...
At that point, it was hard to say. It was certainly going through a lot. Had just had an operation, had just survived a heart attack, was on the verge of a stroke. So,
yeah.
I mean, that wasn't but hours later that he had his stroke.
It was interesting because he had once had, this is a man who rarely went to doctors, but he had once had a hernia operation. And so just for conversation's sake, I mean, we didn't know his life would be ending shortly, so we were just having conversations. And when we asked him, how did this operation compare to your other operation, his response was the story about being in a tunnel, as if he didn't really even hear our question. He just said, I was in a tunnel. So
you don't think that he was then maybe trying to share with you that he was going to be departing shortly? I mean, my buddies are there, and they're calling me to come, but I needed to come back.
Yeah.
Well, I think we, in our hearts, from our experiences, had that in the back of our mind, but it wasn't anything Tom's mom was...
She was not prepared to hear.
He was ready to go. I think he wanted to do this tricky surgery because I think he's figured, well, this is a good way to, you know, take me out. If I go into a surgery that I'm not expected to come out of, fine, let it be that way. Because he was really, you know, when he did come through the surgery, we were talking to doctors about what lay ahead for him, and I knew that was not a life he would enjoy.
Yeah. See, to me, that is very evidential because he was simply reporting what he saw.
Yeah.
Without any expectations or, you know, or even if he didn't necessarily believe, you know, in that.
Oh, he reported
a tunnel and seeing the light. You know, that is more important than some of the people that come back and tell you about things.
We're going to go
to a break. We come back. There's a lot more to talk about. Stay with us. We'll be back in a few minutes.
The CAMLAC Center is putting birth and death back together again. Aimed at changing the way we look at death, the CAMLAC Center was founded in 2002 as a publishing company and teaching center. When we know that there is nothing but life, we realize that birth and death are events in time and space. Our grief can open us to other dimensions of reality and allow us to experience our loved ones who are no longer in the physical body. Our events and products are based on personal experiences of survival of consciousness after physical death and decades of research into how death has influenced the development of our consciousness. Visit www.camlac.com, that's K-A-M-L-A-K.com, for articles, videos, books, and more to help you cope with the loss of a loved one. Does consciousness survive death? Can technology be used to interact with the deceased? Can hearing from the dead heal the living? At the Wind Bridge Institute, we are working to answer these and similar questions. Through our studies with certified research mediums, we are examining psychic abilities and communication with the other side, offering insights into the limitless nature of consciousness and unlocking the possibilities of our bodies, minds, and spirits. Be a part of it. Become a WindBridge member today. Please visit www.windbridge.org to learn more.
Hello, my name's Piero Calvi Parisetti, MD. I invite you to discover my video course on Evidence for Life After Life, a professional counseling resource for the bereaved and the dying.
Transform the fear of death. Heal the pain of a loss by learning about life after life.
For more information and a free preview, visit www.drparisetti.com. That's drparisetti in one word, www.forevermindfulness.com.
I would like to introduce you to the Forever Family Foundation, a nonprofit organization whose mission is to provide support for families who have suffered the loss of a loved one. We believe in the continuity of the family, even though a member has left the physical world. We invite anyone who's trying to cope with the loss of a loved one to contact the Forever Family Foundation at 631-425-7707 or on the web at forevermindfulness.org. For years, people have been reporting communication from those no longer in our physical world. Historically, science and religion have taught us to ignore such messages. Yet, there is now substantial scientific evidence to the contrary. In response to this, the Forever Family Foundation has developed a sign registry to demonstrate the existence of this other dimension. On our website, people can register signs that they, after passing, plan on communicating to a specific loved one. Upon the registrant's passing, the stored information can be verified by the recipient of these signs. Participants will be taking part not only in a grand scientific experiment, but in providing the greatest gift of all, the knowledge that we survive our physical death. For more information, contact the Forever Family Foundation at 631-425-7707, or you can find us on the web at forevermindfulness.org. Or to register a sign, go directly to thesignregistry.com.
Welcome back to Signs of Life, brought to you by the Forever Family Foundation.
Welcome back to The Gathering on Signs of Life Radio. Our number here is 1-888-627-6008. We're talking about common cliches and sayings about grief and the afterlife and the nature of time and fate. I was looking at a lot of, you know, old quotes, and a lot of the things that we say about death are because people have always thought of death as being final and being fearful of it. Some of the places, paid the ultimate price. You hear that all the time, right, when they're talking of the ultimate price being death, it's final, and that's it. A fate worse than death. death is the great leveler, if you heard that one.
Yeah.
And, of course, and as part of the wedding vows, till death do us part.
That's not right.
I never quite. We don't.
Who wrote that?
We don't get off that easy.
You should research that.
You didn't hear that.
I did hear that. I ignored it.
I did as well.
In Tom's next life, he's coming back as a woman.
Till death to do us part. Yeah. So,
women in the 1970s.
Do they still say that?
I think people writing their own vows are thinking about these words and changing them up. How about the, to obey?
A promise to obey.
I've officiated a few weddings. I don't think I've said either of those.
No. That's good. What about when people, again, this is more related to, like, fate, you know, people always say, it wasn't in the cards. People say that as an excuse, too, like when they, even if they screw up on something or they miss out or they don't win something or they lose, it wasn't in the cards.
And would you take cards to mean to me? I'd take it like tarot cards. Telling your future.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
Oh, I always thought of it as playing cards.
But aren't playing cards
the hand you were dealt?
Yeah.
Well, that's true. But don't playing cards come from tarot? Wasn't there tarot cards first and then?
I think it was the other way around. They say that you can use playing cards instead of tarot cards. The tarot is just a focus point for people who really can't connect to the other side.
Right.
It is just a crutch, and that you can toss away the cards and you can connect anyway and get the information.
Oh, certainly. And there's many of the medium books we've read.
Look how many different
start off with tarot.
And look how many different kinds of tarot cards there are.
Yeah.
So.
Well, the point is, in the cards is the same thing as saying. Fate, isn't it?
It's in.
Yeah.
It was in.
It's not. Wasn't in my hands. It was in universe's hands.
Mm-hmm. Right, but if you're going to believe that everything is determined by fate, then you might as well sit back and let things happen.
Yeah,
right.
Which you can't, because then your fate is you're just a couch potato.
Well, could fate be that interpretation of that blueprint that you came with, and that's an easier way for people to understand
I like that.
It?
I like that.
Yeah.
Well, I think lots of times it's just to, you know, relinquish responsibility, you know.
Yeah.
So you don't feel bad.
Right.
Yeah.
How about you say to somebody, doesn't your conscience bother you?
Oh.
That's an interesting one. I mean,
I'm not saying your consciousness.
No, your conscience.
Conscience.
Did I say consciousness?
No, no,
you
say it right.
But you know, so when you break that down, what does that really mean? And yeah, I mean, obviously, you say that because you want somebody to feel guilty.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But you're not saying, well, you should think about that. You're saying your conscience, you know. So is your conscience
ties in with the soul searching, because it's not you. It's what's beneath you, what's running you.
Right. So on a deeper level.
Yeah.
And how do you sleep at night? Well, it's the same thing, you know. You can't sleep because your conscience is you're feeling guilty, right? But are you feeling guilty on a deeper level, or just, you know, superficial?
I think on behalf of our many listeners who are probably shouting at their computer right now, saying, "Oh, yeah, you said that." The line that jumps right to my mind is, "They've gone to a better place,"
right?
Which is true, I think.
Yeah.
But does it help you in any way?
And God needed him, or if it's a child, you know, God needed a little help.
Well, that's the response to that, is what kind of God will take a child.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
I think that was in that movie, Down the Rabbit Hole, with Nicole Kidman, and that was an excellent scene where they're in the support group.
Yeah.
And somebody in the support group says, you know, God needed another angel, and Nicole Kidman goes off on that.
Yeah.
And says, well, he didn't need to take my angel, you know, and she goes, why don't you just leave all the angels alone? Well, she really delivers this beautiful, very lost parent response to the bad phrase.
Yeah.
It's eye-opening to people who haven't suffered a loss if they see down the rabbit hole.
Of the great philosophers wrote about death. Epicurus wrote, "Why should I fear death? If I am, death is not. If death is, I am not. Why should I fear that which cannot exist when I do?"
That's something that goes with morning parties.
Yeah. But when you think about that, that is an argument, you know, for people that are fearful of death, you know, that they will say, well, there's nothing to fear, because if you're really... if it is final and you're dead, you're not going to, there's nothing to fear. You're not going to feel anything, because you'll be dead and you won't exist anymore, right? So that, in a sense, is used to make people supposedly feel better, you know, that they're going to just be total annihilation. Doesn't make me feel any better, but to a lot of people it does.
Another Woody Allen line, he says, there's only, you know, there's two things that will only happen once in my life, sex and death. Only after death I won't feel nauseous.
That's a good one. The ones that love us never really leave us. Sirius Black, Harry Potter, and the Prisoner of Azkaban.
Wow. Getting all Potter on us.
It is the secret of the world that all things subsist and do not die, but retire a little from sight and afterwards return again. Ralph Waldo Emerson.
Oh, I was going to say that. Wow. Oh, I like that.
You know, you're reminding me of another phrase, which I kind of subscribe to. He completed his life cycle. As if you've only come with enough energy to do the things you had to do, and you've completed it. So you're out.
You go back and recharge.
Yeah. True. And recharge and reincarnate.
Mm-hmm. How about... what goes around comes around.
Wow. I would love to see somebody try to say that to a grieving person.
Well, that wasn't with grief, but, you know, it's just karma, right? It's a karma thing.
Yeah, well, that is true. Yeah.
The grass is always greener is a common one, you know, and that's...
I think you see that a lot, and I know that we've witnessed it in the support groups of people comparing their losses,
mm-hmm.
you know,
wow.
like a loss of a child is much more severe than the loss of a parent, or you couldn't possibly be bereaved because your pet died. Everybody tries to compare yeah. losses. You know, and I think that goes along with that concept of the grass is always greener. But we've seen people get into fights with each other over these losses.
Who's suffering more?
Yeah, who's suffering more?
Yeah,
or which,
yeah.
or what kind of passing is worse than another? An accidental
yeah.
or one where somebody was sick for a while? Well, you had time to say goodbye because they were sick for 3 years, and
wow.
I didn't have it. So there's all these different grass is always greener. On the other side, things that does come into
yeah, it does
grief.
It made me think back. You know, when we were going to the support group, you know, and people, you know, it would be all parents who had lost children, and just like Fran said,